Hey there, foreigners. This is Rohit from BreakingTheBorders.com, home of the ambitious immigrant. Today's guest is Gonzalo Juarez. Did I say that right, Gonzalo?
Yeah, that's correct. That's perfect, man.
He's the founder of eTips, which is a company that builds mobile apps. At eTips, Gonzalo and his team creates these beautiful apps that are detailed guides to popular tourist destinations like New York, London, and many other cities. eTips made over $1 million in sales through the App Store, and I invited him to talk to us about how he did it. Gonzalo, welcome.
Thank you very much, Rohit. Very, very warm introduction, actually. Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, thanks for coming. And I have to come to the biggest reason why I invited you here. So where are you building your company right now from?
Well, we are actually in two different places right now. We are actually have our human power in Bariloche, Argentina. That's very south of Argentina. So, I mean, normally people, they know Buenos Aires, mm-hmm. but this is Bariloche. That's very south. I'm actually from the north of Argentina, a small city called Salta. But we incorporated eTips into the Silicon Valley. So I'm right now in the Silicon Valley, and we are trying to play the big leagues with the big players.
Big players, yeah. Absolutely. So where were you born and where did you grow up?
I was born in Salta, Argentina. Mm-hmm. I did my high school over there. And then I came to play soccer, actually, into the States. I got a full scholarship playing soccer.
So you went to school here?
Yeah, in the University of Maine. That's very cold state, actually.
Uh-huh.
And that's very close. It was a small town called Fort Kent. It's between Canada and the U.S. And then when I got my business degree, I went to work in Switzerland, where I worked as a financial analyst for HP. In the Geneva headquarters. Mm-hmm. I have dual nationality with Switzerland and Argentina, so that allows me to go back and forth from Switzerland to Argentina very easily. We actually started eTips over there in 2009 with my brother. Mm-hmm. At that time, yeah.
Before you go to what you did in eTips, I'm curious to know if you did your undergrad here, if you graduated from here, why move to Switzerland? Was it, did you have any visa issues or something?
At that time, no, I didn't have any issues. Actually, I got a job offer as a financial analyst in Maine with this teacher who used to have a business he was running another different business. And I actually didn't think that much. I graduated and my parents were living in Switzerland at that time. So I decided to go over there. I wanted to visit Europe. I wanted to backpack around Europe. I love to travel. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the main reason I went over there.
To travel.
Yes.
Well, your dad is also an entrepreneur, right?
Yes. Well, he's an entrepreneur. He has his own clinic, actually. He's a medical doctor, okay. But at the same time, he has always pushed us to be independent. So, I at the beginning, the main goal for myself and my brother, they were to be economically independent. And that's what we achieved, actually, with eTips.
Yeah. So when you were growing up, was there a lot of encouragement or in your family through your dad or through people around?
I think the main mentor was my dad, to be honest.
Okay.
And my grandfather, who was a very pushy guy. He was living in a small city. He wanted to study medicine, but he didn't have money to study medicine. So he just opened a pharmacy. So something like related to. Mm-hmm. And he has always pushed my dad to go to college. And the same way my dad is pushing us. And I think I'm going to push my son like that.
The cycle continues.
Yeah.
So you took up a job at HP while you had this dream of being financially independent, which is starting your own company, right?
Yeah.
Why did you take up a job at that time if you had the dream of
starting your own? I needed to work. I needed money to support my life, actually, because I got married very young. My wife came to Switzerland with me. I know my wife for forever, basically. I mean, she we met on in we met the first year I went to Buenos Aires to do some soccer training.
Uh-huh.
We met over there, and then she came to Maine with me. We got married. I got married very young. So we needed to leave. We needed to live out of something.
So it was purely practical.
Yes.
To get a job.
Yes.
And
well, at the beginning, I thought about working for like an international company and do my career over there. But then at the same time, I have this feeling that I wasn't doing the right thing, and my dad pushing me to be like economically independent. So,
mm-hmm.
So yeah. That's it. Yeah.
At that time, your co-founder, Sebastian, your brother, right?
Yes.
And what was he doing at that time which got you this idea of starting your company?
Actually, he got the idea. Mm-hmm. He was a gamer, a gaming developer for Gameloft. He used to work in Buenos Aires, and then he was upgraded to a new position, being the e-commerce manager for LATAM. That's all Latin America. And so he was looking at the numbers, and the numbers were really good. And at that time,
what numbers was he looking at?
He was looking at the numbers Gameloft was doing with their small games for the old Nokia phones.
So revenue numbers from the games.
Yes, okay. Revenue and downloads number.
And this is not even the smartphones. This is old Nokia phones.
Yeah, not even a smartphone. I mean, the smartphone hasn't, at that time, it hasn't arrived yet.
Okay.
So he was looking at the numbers, and he called me, actually. That was when I was finishing my university degree here. And he called me, he said, would you like to be part of, if I have this idea, would you like to be part of this project? And I said, hell yeah, but I mean, I cannot help because I have no technology background, you know. Mm-hmm. I just know how to use a computer. And he was very pushy. He said, okay, I'm going to start, and then you follow me back. And I say, okay, let's do it. And it took many years to really develop what we have today. So we were basically, actually, when I was working for HP, I was working full-time HP and a couple of hours at my place trying to learn more about the mobile industry.
What did you start with? What did the first thing that you and your brother did?
It's funny because we were trying to build, we were building small books with tips, and that's where the name came from, eTips.
Uh-huh.
We were building small books for the old Nokia phones, for the old Java phones. So basically we were how to talk to a girl or how to talk to a guy or 10, you know, the top 10 exercises you can do to have your abs.
I see.
Those like
so these books. Were mini guides or full length books that you were sending, and this was still in the Nokia phones, right?
Yes.
So how there was no I used to have a Nokia phone back in 2004-5 time frame. I don't remember there being a marketplace. So how do people buy these?
There
guides?
Were with this SMS model that you send an SMS to a certain number with a certain text, and you get a link to download the app. So you it's basically by link, you just download it, and you see like in a very, very old-fashioned format the tips.
I see. And these books get downloaded, I'm guessing, over mobile network, right? There is not
yes, but Wi-Fi. But at that time, you need to deal with the aggregators, with where they were the middleman between the consumer and the operator, the mobile operator.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, it was really difficult to monetize because you really needed to deal with them in terms of how much, what's the percentage you will get.
Mm-hmm. Did you make any revenue out of those tips?
We did, but it was like very small.
Very small.
It was more the time that we were spending talking to the aggregators than the revenue we were making.
Say that again. You are spending more money just talking to aggregators.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yes. So it wouldn't even cover the expenses that it takes to
not at all. You were just one small fish in a big ocean over there. I mean, they didn't care about you, to be honest.
Okay. And then what happens? Then iPhone releases and
yes.
The App Store with it, right?
So yeah. So the great Steve Jobs comes up. Mm-hmm. He comes with the iPhone, And we say, and my, actually, it's funny because my brother told me, well, we should definitely do some apps for the iPhone. And I told him, nobody's going to buy the iPhone. So I had a very bad feeling about
it. Really? Why did you think so at that time?
Because, I don't know, I just felt that way. But it was like a very short conversation. I mean, he didn't agree with me, so we stopped doing it. We started doing it. So thanks God we did it. And
So he didn't agree with you. He didn't believe what you said. So you started doing it anyway.
Yes, okay. That's correct.
I see.
And that, so over there, my brother was working for a gaming company called Zed in Spain. And I was in Switzerland at that time. And we used to travel a lot. I used to go to Madrid like every once a month just to work with him. So, and then I was with my wife traveling around, backpacking around Europe. So we really enjoy traveling. And one thing that I really hate about traveling is carrying things, even a camera. I hate to carry things with me. Mm-hmm. So in order to move through a city, at that time, you need a paper map. You needed a book guide because I hate to carry things, but I know I want to learn who built the building, how the building was built. I know I want to learn some history about it, the culture we are going to. So I like to read.
And at that time, the only way to learn that information was by carrying all these books and maps and guides.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That's correct. So when the iPhone came up, my brother said, why don't we do travel guides? That was a good idea. So we started to design them.
So did you launch straight away in the App Store with travel guides or did you try the tips?
No, we launched straight away with travel guides.
Okay.
The first city we did was Paris, mm-hmm. which was a city that I love, actually. At that time, I had gone to Paris like 8 times. So I knew it by heart. Mm-hmm. So, and we decided to do it by itineraries. So we wanted to give a solution to those travelers willing to discover a city in a certain amount of days.
It's like a 3-day guide to Paris is the product.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We have different options. You can decide. You can decide if you want a 1-day tour, a 2-day tour, 3-day tour, or 5-day tours. Mm-hmm. We started with that model.
And the app will tell you exactly what are the most important points of interest to visit if you got 1 day versus 3 days and so on.
Yes.
I see.
Yes.
So is it one payment that will work for each itinerary?
Actually, we changed different models. Okay. It's one payment. The model we have right now, it's freemium. So you download that for free. You have the first day for free. You can see the information for the first day, but you cannot go to the map. 90% of the content is locked, mm-hmm. and you need to pay to unlock it. So whenever you pay only one fee, and you have the full guide for every single day that you need in pocket.
What was it when you launched first?
Well, we had a paying model when we launched.
Okay.
It was a $5 app. Mm-hmm. We have a paying model. You just need to pay to download it. And then Apple changed their way of doing things.
I believe at that time when you launched, which was, I think it was in 2008, 2009. Is that the right time frame?
I think it was 2010. 2009, 2010.
At that time, I don't believe Apple had in-app purchases, did they?
They didn't. Well, at least we didn't use them.
Okay.
It was like a full app, a very... very heavy app in terms of weight, megabytes.
I see. So mm-hmm. every different city would get its own app and every different itinerary or the day plan would get its own app.
Yes, that's correct.
Wow. That's a lot of apps to design.
Yeah. Well, right now, I mean, in 2015, we decided to build a model of creating apps. So we are currently creating 60 new apps a month. So that's a ratio for the last 4 months. We are trying to upscale that to 100.
Wow. Whoa, that's a lot of apps.
We have built in 2015, we have built a tech company, to be honest, that happens to monetize really good by selling travel guides. Mm-hmm. But this technology we've implemented, it is allowing us to build that many apps per week.
I see. That's a very interesting point that you made. I definitely want to learn more about what you did in 2015 to scale so much. But before we go there, in your first design and in your first building of apps, right? Who was building or who was developing and coding all these ones?
Well, the code, Sebastian, my brother, was the one who always took care of. I actually don't understand anything about coding. Mm-hmm. I'm more about the business side of the company. And we had this one employee, actually. I mean, the first revenue coming in, we decided to pay one employee. Mm-hmm. Because at that time, we were working both for full-time, and we needed one guy to be full-time. So we couldn't do it because it was a huge risk for us to lose our jobs. Yeah. So we paid this guy, which we used to call them El Colo. So he might be listening, actually.
What is it that mean?
That's red hair.
Oh, red hair. Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, no, we used to... Well, he used to work with us at the beginning. Uh-huh. He helped us a lot. The building of the app, the content itself, the writing content for the first app, I actually wrote it. It was me who wrote it.
You wrote it, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Okay. I did some research.
That is the Paris guide that you were talking about earlier. Okay.
Yes. Then we improve it. I mean, the actual guide of Paris is not the one written by me.
Okay, got it. So in the one that you made for Paris, did you make any money out of it?
Yes. Actually, it was really fast. Actually, we uploaded, we got approved, and then we made $3 out of the five we were selling. $3 like in 2 days. You know?
In 2 days, okay.
And without going to fight with the aggregators that we were used to, you know.
So you don't have to worry about how much percentage, whether the aggregators were giving you the right amount of money. You get to do this directly from App Store, and you get to keep all of it also.
Yeah, it was a very direct business. So I talked to my brother and said, look, why don't we do 100 apps? Mm-hmm. Instead of getting three, we get 300, you know? Mm-hmm. I thought at that time it was like a linear equation, but it's not like that right now. But anyways. Yeah.
Is it more exponential?
Not actually. It really depends on the city. It really depends on the town, because right now we cover museums, different landmarks, national parks and all that stuff.
I see.
It really depends on the destination, actually.
What happened when you decided to drop your price from $5 to $2?
It was a big bet. It was a big bet, but at that time we were getting the same revenue with more downloads. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was a very good bet. Actually, Apple, they have a really nice system about changing prices, because the prices are. Whenever you change a price, it gets affected like right away in an hour time. Mm-hmm. So you can really try it out, the system, in a 24-hour period, you know. Mm-hmm. So we really tried it out. And
did you do that? Did you actually do it only for 24-hour period to check how the apps did before you dropped it?
At that time, we didn't do it. We just decided to drop the price, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And we were going to see the results in a week time. Mm-hmm. And the results were really fantastic, actually.
Okay. What was good about those results?
Because we were getting the same revenue with more users.
What was the revenue at that time?
Oh, it was like $100 a day.
$100 a day?
Yeah. It was very small revenue, but for us, it was huge, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that you were still working in your full-time job at that time. So, $3,000 of... money on the side doesn't sound like a bad deal.
And plus he was paying the full-time employee at that time. So.
Oh, yeah. And you had a goal of a revenue number to reach per month before you quit your job, right?
Yes.
What was it?
Well, I wanted to be able to live in Switzerland, mm-hmm. Trying to reach that goal, you know, and trying to reach the goal of being economically independent. So... And it's funny because whenever we reached that goal, we actually needed to decide who will be leaving the job, even me, myself, or Sebastian.
What was that goal?
What was the goal? The goal for me, it was around $5,000.
Okay, $5,000 a month in revenue.
Yeah.
Or profitability.
Yeah.
Profitability.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so whenever we reach that goal, we simply didn't know what to do, you know?
Yeah.
Because quitting a job is not an easy task, you know? Yeah. I mean, so we really flapped the coin over there.
Oh, yeah? Maybe. You actually did it? You physically flipped the coin?
Yeah.
Wow. And you won the toss.
I won the toss. So I actually quit my job and he kept working for the game developing company.
How long it took you to go from zero to $5,000 a month?
It took us from 2009 around, well, I quit my job in 2011, actually, 2 years.
2 years?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's even 2010. So it took us a year, maybe. Maybe a year and a year and a half. I don't really recall the exact date, but I remember when I quit HP.
Yeah. Yeah. What happened that day?
Well, it was beautiful, actually, because I was going to work from home like every day mm-hmm. of my life. I was really happy with it because this is something that we bootstrapped. We don't have any debts. We have zero debts, actually. And there's no investors. So, the feeling you get at that time, at that point, it's almost overwhelming, to be honest.
I see. So, you have built a true asset and you have this income-generating company and you don't have any liabilities in terms of debts or you don't have any funders that you're responsible for. It was completely bootstrapped.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah, that was really good. And then the next step was to let Sebastian quit his job, actually. So we need to work harder.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually did it. In 2011, we were really profitable.
Mm-hmm.
We started to, we were both out of our jobs. We were full-timers with ETIPS. And we started to hire new people.
I see. And is that... when did you lose 70% of sales in 1 month?
Oh, that was in 2014, actually.
So this was way after that you...
Yeah, very after. Mm-hmm. We don't spend... this is really important to understand because normally the startups, they do... they have a huge amount of money to do some marketing, or at least some money to do marketing. We actually haven't done any marketing whatsoever since the beginning. We really rely our revenue and downloads from the people just going to the App Store and searching for a city or searching for a certain destination.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, we are really relying on the algorithm of Apple for our apps to be discoverable. So in September 2014, Apple changes the whole way they used to have their algorithms.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, so our sales just dropped 70% from one day to the next one. We thought it was a mistake. We thought it was an error. And then we kept like that for a week. And then sales just kept like very, very weak.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to support a few employees we had at that time. I think there were like four at the time. And we didn't know what to do. So we started to do new things. I'm an expert in App Store optimization. So I started to try out new things.
And why did that happen? Did you know why that happened?
I think because Apple was trying to bring to the first results the ones that are the apps that are free. The apps that are free, they were coming first, and before it was a mix between paid and free. So we were coming first.
I see. So since you were charging for your app, you were going down on the rankings when people search for New York or whatever city that they're interested in.
Yeah, and then it wasn't only that, but then the keywords and the app title started to have a different weight in order for the App Store optimization to be discoverable.
Okay. So the previous keywords that you're using were not as valuable anymore.
Yes.
Okay.
So we need to change 150 apps. So that's we have 150 apps, so we need to change all of them. We need to change the revenue model. We need to start doing in-app purchases.
So you started doing all of these changes, right? Changes to keywords, but changes to the pricing strategy and so on. But before you made those decisions, how long it took for you to figure out this was the reason for changing the sales?
Honestly, it took me maybe a week or 10 days.
Oh, it was quick.
Because I got desperate. I didn't sleep for those days. And I was reading as much as I could. I was contacting the people in the app server, but I was contacting different app mastermind groups that I belong to. Mm-hmm. And we were trying to find a solution for it.
I see. So in your mastermind groups, even others started experiencing something similar.
Yes.
And that's how you were able to use Collective Brain.
Yes.
I see.
Yes. And then, it took us a long time to develop this new in-app purchases system because we didn't have it.
So what did you change with the revenue model or with the way you charge at that time?
Well, we were charging $2 mm-hmm. per app mm-hmm. and then we went free. We needed to go free.
For them to show up.
Yeah, for them to show up.
But so, how would you make your revenue in that case?
Well, we started with the in-app purchases. At the beginning, we put them for free. Mm-hmm. We weren't making any money. The purpose of that was just to be able to see if our apps were going to come higher. So we found that that was a problem. So we need to integrate the in-app purchases system.
In-app purchases. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we did it, and that took us maybe a month, mm-hmm. month and a half. So we were like 45 days blank, you know, like 45 days without revenue, actually.
So you went and updated all of the 150 yeah. apps.
Yeah, then we updated all of them and we started to see revenue coming in again.
So that new revenue is only from people who are buying new, or the ones who got it for free at one point, those are done, right? Those are gone. You're never going to get that revenue.
Yeah, those are gone, actually. Okay. So actually, everybody at that time needed to pay to see the content. Even the guys who downloaded for free, that I really apologize about it, but that was the only way Apple allowed us to do it.
Oh, so you had to go back and change it for the people who already got it for free also?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, got it. Yeah. So you couldn't change it only for the new downloads?
No, we couldn't.
So you did recover the revenue which you would have otherwise lost?
Yes, we recovered the revenue and we could survive, actually.
What was the revenue at that time?
Well, we were around 300, 400 actually. No, it was 400 days. It was like 500 days, something like that.
Sorry, 500?
Yeah, 500 a day.
Oh, 500 a day.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was the net after mm-hmm. all, I mean, after all the expenses we had.
I see. Oh, it was the profit.
Yes, it was
about.
The profit, actually. Sorry.
I see.
And then we were really, and that was 2014. So that was the end of 2014. Mm-hmm. In 2015, at the beginning, a year ago, we decided to conquer the long tail of travel, actually. And that what it means, long tail of travel means that every single city that you decide to go, or every single landmark that you decide to know about it, that we will have an app for it. So we started to build this empire, or this big machine mm-hmm. that is allowing us to produce 60 new apps a month with really curated content translated into different languages, with augmented reality, offline maps, and beautiful pictures.
Yeah, what is augmented reality?
Augmented reality is a feature that we have in order for the traveler not to ask questions when you go and travel. Mm-hmm. There are some people that are shy to ask in different languages. So basically with augmented reality, you just open the camera in the phone, you move around 360 degree, mm-hmm. and you will see in your camera the different places of interest. So you will see like pins mm-hmm. in your camera, like colorful, and then you just touch a pin mm-hmm. and it will tell you what you're looking at. So if I am in New York and I move my camera around, it will show me where the Empire State is, where Times Square is.
And then if you click on that little icon, it will open and show you more details about Empire State Building.
Yes.
If you're looking at it. It's a really cool feature, and I've never seen this feature in any app before. And this is beautifully designed on yours, actually.
Yes, and actually we got featured by Tim Cook in 2012 for being the only in their when they were releasing the iPad 2. We got featured by Tim Cook for being the only ones with augmented reality when they were presenting their keynote in the Apple yearly conference.
I see. And so Tim Cook, he actually opened your app in the keynote?
No. There, I mean, whenever they show the keynote, it's a
pre-recorded one.
It's a presentation of the new device they are presenting. In the presentation, you could see like there's like a couple of seconds where a guy is standing in front of a museum in Madrid and he's using our app.
I see. So coming to 2015, just told us about how you decided to go after the long tail, right?
Yes.
Why did you make the decision?
Because we see that that's a problem that we see in mobile. Today, if you are traveling to like a very exotic place, there are not many options to pick in an app, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You can go on website and you can choose a city and you can see a lot of overwhelming information in the web, but you don't actually have an app.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're traveling, there are roaming costs involved. So we decided to build an app for every single city, mm-hmm. every single destination or landmark to be 100% offline. So the traveler doesn't have to go and spend for a paper map or like a book guide or anything, and they just can travel with the phone.
Yeah, and then, but you have to pay for each new city that you want to get, I'm guessing, right?
Yes.
I see.
Yes.
And how did you scale from, at that time, I believe you, at the time you made the decision, I believe you had like 500 apps, is that?
No, right now we have 550 apps around.
Oh, right, that is right now. So
yeah.
At that time when you made the decision, how many apps did you have?
150.
So 150 to 550 in 1 year.
Yes.
Wow. So what did you have to do to make it so scalable?
Well, we need to hire more people. That's for sure.
Okay.
So right now we have 14.
Mm-hmm.
We need to build a system with our engineers of trying to collect them as much information, curated information as we can from different sites. Then we have to pay for more translations. We really need to build the business again. But we were scaling like step by step. We didn't say, okay, let's do 60 new apps a month. Like it wasn't a one day decision, you know.
Yeah.
So we started planning by doing only one new app per week,
mm-hmm.
and then it was like easily done. So and the engineers were building this machine. So we were scaling step by step. To be honest.
I see. So you have 14 full time employees right now.
Yes.
And do you have people freelancing also?
Not actually. We have some translators,
mm-hmm.
but they are not fixed freelancers. We used to have them a lot, but right now we came to one point that it's easier for us to cope with people that are physically in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very hard for us to cope with many different translators from around the world.
Got it. And where are the full-time employees located mostly?
They are mostly located in Bariloche in Argentina.
Argentina. And people who build companies out of Argentina, I've heard not so great things about the government and the employee rules and the unions. Is it really hard to build a company out of Argentina?
Yes. Actually, we just changed the government and I think they are opening. They are in the process of trying to open more the borders.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to build a business in Argentina, actually, for the old government. I'm not talking about this new one because they just arrived in December. So,
mm-hmm. so we don't know. So hopefully things are getting better.
Yeah, because even to develop an app for iPhone and iPad, you need a Mac.
Mm-hmm.
In Argentina, you are not allowed to buy a Mac.
Oh, you're not. You can't buy a Mac. Go to a store and buy a Mac.
Because the borders, the customs, they stop bringing imported things.
Ah.
So in the official market, you cannot buy a Mac, you cannot buy an iPhone, you cannot buy an iPad in the official market.
Mm-hmm.
There is like under the table market, black market, you know.
I see.
That you can buy it, but it's like twice as expensive.
If it is my personal Mac, can I take it?
Yeah, you can take it from here.
Oh, okay. It's just that you can sell it to
but
people.
But you cannot go to a store and say, okay, give me a Mac.
Which severely limits your ability to
build stuff. Of course.
Build
stuff, right? And that's only a small example.
Mm-hmm.
Then how do you, I mean, you are not allowed to transfer money from here to over there. So how do you really pay your employees? How can you have an Apple? How can you have an account with Apple? They are not able to transfer the money to your account over there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really difficult. It's extremely difficult.
Mm.
So Bariloche is very close to Chile. So actually my brother goes back and forth like every single month and brings laptops and new devices to Argentina, you know.
I see. And Chile is more open than Argentina.
Yes. Yes. They have a very open economy, actually. I think we will become a very good country in terms of building new startups and new technology because of the human power we have over there. The human power is in Argentina. It's amazingly, it's incredible, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
The universities there are really good, and you have like the human capacity of building an empire over there. But you know, you never know with governments and rules.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. You are just.
I know. I can totally relate to that. I'm from India originally, and we have the same problem over there also. People are incredible, but the government has been. So there is a saying, like in China, the development happens because of the government, and in India, the development happens in spite of the government.
Well, in Argentina, it was like that. I just don't want to say it is like that because we changed the government.
Yeah, yeah, and things are getting better in India as well with a new government which started a few years ago. So
yeah, because if you think about it, I mean, the efficiency of a business model, it's incredible. If you have the right contacts here and you develop things over there, I mean, the cost over there is very low.
Mm-hmm.
It's 8 times lower than here. And you have an incredible quality of product.
Yeah.
You know?
Which can really not only be a cheaper product as such for the US customers, also boost the Argentinian economy in
yes.
a big way.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When did you start getting into the iWatch?
Well, we started when they launched, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact day they launched, but since we are developers and we come like every single year to San Francisco for the Worldwide Developer Conference, we knew the Apple Watch was coming up like 6 months before. And when you are a developer, you have access to that information like a month or 2 months before they launch. So whenever we knew about it, we just started to study more about developing the Apple Watch apps. So since the moment they just launched, we started putting our apps with the Apple Watch capacity. And we have a really cool feature, actually, because you just inside our apps, we have a metro routing app. So if you are in the city where they have a metro, you just choose the origin and you just pick the destination and we calculate the route for you. So we can do it on the Apple Watch as well.
Hmm. So it can actually guide you through. You mentioned earlier that all your apps are offline, right?
Yes.
The app, watch app also is offline?
It is offline.
So how does it navigate if it is offline?
It's just algorithm.
Oh.
It's just the offline algorithm. We just.
How does it know where you are? Your location needs to be through online.
Yeah, but not actually, because with geolocalization, you need to be online. I mean, your phone has to be on, mm-hmm. and they geolocalize it.
So you don't have to be online for the GPS to work. The GPS is still tracking your location through satellites.
That's
and
correct.
Stuff.
Yes.
So you don't incur roaming charges.
Yes, especially we need the geolocalization for the augmented reality.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know where you are to point the different places of interest.
Yeah. I'm going to a city which I haven't been to much in a week. I'm going to San Diego, and I downloaded your app already, and I'm really excited to try it on because most of the places I go to, I already know. I don't want an app to help me, but this is definitely a use case. I'm really looking forward to it.
Oh, thank you very much. I think you will enjoy Santiago. Well, Santiago is a big city, actually.
No. Not Santiago. The San Diego in California.
Ah, Santiago, yeah. Well, definitely, yeah. We should go together. I haven't been there.
Yeah, absolutely. Next week, join me.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, San Diego was in our portfolio of the first 150 apps. In my mind, I always separate them. I mean, the babies, which were the 150, and then the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you will enjoy it.
Great. So what is next for you and the company, Gonzalo?
Well, we decided to incorporate the company in Delaware, in the U.S. Mm-hmm. We have a C-Corp. And,
it must have been incorporated already, right? Or you're just doing it now?
No, we did it. We did it last year, actually.
Okay. So till then, without incorporating, you were running it like a sole proprietorship?
No, actually, we were outside of... I mean, we had a limited corporation. We started with when we were in Europe, so the legal entity was in the UK, actually.
Okay.
And then we transferred to here.
So you're talking about incorporating in the US?
Yes.
Got it. Okay.
We already did that. So the next step would be, I'm based in the Silicon Valley right now, and we are looking for funding. We are profitable, but at the same time, we know what we could do if we have some money on the table, you know. And I think we can really boost this business because we want to clone the same system we have for Apple. We want to clone it for Google into Android. And then we really want to push the marketing side.
Yeah.
So we are going to be playing with right now we are the largest producer of travel apps in the world for iPhone and iPad. Yeah, and we just want to become the largest, like worldwide and in every single app store.
In all app stores, which is Android and Microsoft also? Is that big?
They are big. Okay. They are not as big as Android and Apple, but they have a market.
So are you going after Microsoft also, or you're just focusing on...
We will be going after Microsoft as well, yes.
Okay.
We just want to... in the next future too, for everybody who travels, to think about us.
Oh, great. I wish you all the luck with your company, and hope you to see you again here in the future.
Thank you very much, Rohit. And as I told you, I mean, we can meet. I'm here, so we can meet whenever you want.
Absolutely. If someone wants to get in touch with you, what is the best way for them to do it?
Well, the best way, they can go to the webpage, which is etips.com, or they can email me at gonzalo.juarez@etips.com. If nobody got the name, they can just contact at etips.com.
At etips.com is Twitter?
No, etips.com, it's a website. And
No. So, okay, you're saying go to the contact page on etips.com?
Yeah.
Or you can email. Okay, got it.
Yeah, because the person in charge of getting those contact emails, they will transfer the email to me. So
sounds good. I will leave that information.
Well, you can go to my Twitter account, which is GonzaloJU altogether.
Okay.
And they can get in touch with me.
Awesome. I will leave that information up on the show notes page. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Rohit.
Thank you for tuning in. To get updates on latest episodes, make sure you subscribe with your email by going over to breakingtheborders.com. If you know anyone good as a guest, shoot me an email. I will reach out to the guest, get hold of them, and ask them all the questions that you have. My email is rohit@breakingtheborders.com. Thanks again, and have an amazing day.